Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
There is a major concern in South Africa around food stability. It has been made worse, exacerbated in fact, by the COVID-19 pandemic. Joining us on the line is Robin Hills, Program Manager at Food Gardens for Africa. A very good morning. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us this morning. How are you?
I'm good, Howard. I'm good. I've had a wonderful break, but it's not easy for everybody. And this is a really important topic that we're going to address, yeah?
And we really do, because there's been a tremendous, maybe it's a good thing, because maybe before the COVID pandemic, many of us were just carrying on our lives, not really thinking about food security in the country. When the COVID pandemic hit us, it suddenly became something that we couldn't ignore. What's been your experience?
From a working perspective, Food and Cheese for Africa looks at the environmental mm-hmm. impact of food security and vice versa. That relationship is very intricate. And we can't talk about hunger and starvation without talking about poverty. And so our experience has been that community gardens that we support through corporate funding they've been lifelines for so many community members who are not able to access fresh produce or any food for that matter because of the long lines at malls, if you remember last year.
Absolutely.
And so community gardens suddenly became very popular, especially in the neighborhoods where they served. And people started their own home gardens, and suddenly it reinforced the knowledge of being able to grow your own food. This was compounded by the fact that so many spaza shops and vendors and smallholders were unable to sell. These informal traders on all the corners, especially in townships, produce and supply the local markets with fresh produce, from the depots, so like in Joburg, Tshwane, Durban.
And those places.
Yeah. Mm. These guys couldn't trade. And so I think what it did was highlight how vulnerable the sector is, right? And especially women and children, naturally, by virtue of their vulnerability. They didn't have access to food, and they had less choice, right? So this is what happens often with the poor, because they are more sensitive to environmental changes. And by environmental, I also mean lockdown, because if there are changes in their environment, they have less choice, because either they're not
and
working.
They're disempowered. And they're disempowered. So you might find that the taxi industry, for example, or any other industry works together as a strong force, whereas the poor are much, much more disempowered in the sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sort of social fabric that supports the poor is sensitive to any changes because it's held together by communities, basically. And when those communities, when lockdown is enforced, people don't have options. And I think that this also points to the flow of natural resources, right? Like, for example, people might have 3 in 5 children grow up in an undernourished environment in South Africa. That's a lot, hey? And it's on the rise. You know, we used to think in the 90s and 80s of kids in Ethiopia being really, really hungry. And we keep kind of thinking that things are getting better, right? Because modernization, mechanization, development, but it's not. It's actually getting worse.
It's interesting. I read a paper recently, and I'm trying to think where it was, where they spoke about the fact that there actually isn't a global shortage of food. There's actually a logistical problem, because it all sits in different areas. If it could be distributed better across the world or across the planet, we wouldn't have so much of a problem. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you're describing is the food system, and the food system becoming more and more consolidated, so that retailers have greater relationships with farmers, and fresh produce markets are becoming more and more consolidated. Where we had sort of 15, now we've got 7. It's the same with the kind of food that we eat. For example, we used to eat a diversity, a plethora of the various vegetables, and now we rely on sort of 10. And like with the panda, you know, if it relies only on one crop, it becomes more vulnerable, because if something happens to that crop, then it will suffer, its population will go down. So it's the same sort of thing. When we don't have diversity in our food chain, if we're not relying and supporting smallholder farmers, if we're not encouraging diversity in the market, then it makes it really challenging, because with diversity comes so much solution, right? Because any challenge that pops up, there might be a solution around the corner, because it's more of an ecosystem, because it runs like a natural system.
Right, but if you work along in silos, then if something happens to that silo, you become completely vulnerable. So what is the program around Food Gardens for Africa?
So Food and Trees for Africa is a non-profit, mm-hmm. and one of our departments is specific around food security, and food gardens are one of the ways that we ensure people know how to grow food, produce food on a level that is of high quality, relatively consistently, and at a rate or quantity that they always have a surplus, which means that they're getting an income, or they're selling those vegetables to their local market. And we really encourage gate sales, because that means that fresh organic vegetables are available to people in under-resourced communities. And that's our contribution to the solution, because there are so many solutions and so many people are working towards trying to find ways of uplifting the poor, or at least mitigating the damage that our current system does on poor people across the globe.
How practical is it? I mean, how much space does one need in order to plant a garden, a food garden, that will actually provide a reasonable yield for a family?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You know, like, size can be a constriction. There are other constraints out there, mostly water. The biggest challenge, I think, is basically water. Because if there's a community that wants to start a garden, yeah. they can find some land, they can farm communally, they can grow vegetables on a small space in their back garden if they want to just feed their family. But if they want to produce an income, we work at sort of one person per quarter hectare, or four people for a hectare. Because you know, that's your maximum yield, and that's it's also a minimum yield in terms of making about 7,000 rand a month per farmer.
What's so fascinating is, when I asked the question, I didn't even contemplate that access to water would be a problem. And that just shows how far away maybe I am, and people like me might be, from actually recognizing the depth of the problem.
Yeah, it's hard, hey? I mean, farmers, it's a difficult industry. It's a high-risk activity, because if you plant a seed now, you're not guaranteed that's going to grow, you know? A little minor bird can eat all your chili seedlings in 5 minutes.
Amazing.
And that might be the last 10 rand that you spent on seeds. Yeah,
so absolutely.
For the poor, it is high risk. But the other challenge is that it requires knowledge, it requires time,
some
skills,
kind of
usable soil. There's a lot to it. But the thing is that where there's a will, there's a way, right? And in South Africa, a lot of people in under-resourced areas do have farming backgrounds and are interested and care and want to farm. So I think that's the key with anybody who wants to get involved or try and assist or whatever,
right.
is always identify if there is an interest, And how can we best serve that interest? And it's what we call asset-based community development. You find out what assets are there in the community. Is it one gogo who's making soup? Is it three women who are starting to grow lettuces for market? Identify the assets and then support that. And that's how our community development can grow.
Robin, we do need to unfortunately leave it here, but if somebody wants to find out more, they want to get involved, they'd like to contribute in some way, how do they get hold of you?
www.trees.org.za. So it's trees.org.za, and we've got a website there, and you can donate online, or you can phone us, and we can explain how things work.
That is absolutely fantastic. Robin Hills, what an amazing initiative. Just keep going, and just keep doing the magical work that you are doing.